You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
I'm Emily Chang at Apple headquarters in Cupertino, California. This is Bloomberg Technology. We are coming to you live from the Worldwide Developers Conference, the much anticipated gathering of developers, which kicks off today. The tech giant announcing new software, new chips, and even a couple of new MacBooks. We're going to talk to analysts and developers about the key updates throughout the hour. Plus, Elon Musk threatens to end his deal to buy Twitter, why he says the social network is, quote, thwarting his information rights. Can Twitter actually seal the deal? We will discuss. And Apple beats Twitter to an edit button. Back to Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, where the company announced a slew of software updates, as well as that new M2 chip, which will power a new MacBook Air and MacBook Pro. Our Mark Gurman, who of course covers Apple for us, has been across it all. And of course, Mark, much of this you already reported, but I think there were a few new things. Let's start with this M2 chip. Just how transformational will this chip actually be?
So the M2 chip is not a major leap. It is not very transformational. Apple says it's about 18% faster than the M1. Now this is the base model of the M2 chip, right? So you'll see over time, you'll see an M2 Ultra, you'll see an M2 Pro, an M2 Max, maybe an M2 Extreme at the very high end for a Mac Pro eventually. So this is just the beginning of the M2 roadmap. They have to start somewhere. If you remember when they introduced the original M1, November 2020, that appeared first in the Mac Mini, the MacBook Air in the 13-inch MacBook Pro, which was also updated today with the M2 chip.
Well, what is transformational about today? Let's start with the software. Where do you think the most significant updates there are?
Yeah, in terms of the software, two things really stood out. The lock screen on iOS 16. People have been asking, iPhone users have been asking for years for this customizability, the ability to personalize your iPhone, right? The iPhone very much from the very beginning, it's you get these wallpapers or you can set an image. Your font's going to look like this. Your home screen's going to look like this. But they really have moved away from that, letting people really customize the day-to-day iPhone experience. So you're seeing that now. You saw a little bit of that with widgets over the last 2 years. Now you're seeing widgets on the lock screen, your ability to change the font, make a more dynamic picture, different filters and such. So that's very cool. The second thing on the iPad, you're getting this new feature called Stage Manager, which is a new multitasking interface for pro users. And it very much looks like what you would get when multitasking on a Mac. So window resizing, the ability to move windows around, operate four or five different applications at once. So that's a big deal there as well. And I'm looking forward to trying both of those new enhancements out.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I thought was the most transformational. This ability to edit text messages, even unsend text messages. I was pretty excited about this, Mark. Before we talk about it, I want to take a listen to Craig Federighi, the architect of Apple software, what he had to say about this development.
Have you ever sent a message only to immediately realize you didn't quite say what you intended? Well, no worries, because now you can edit any message you just sent, so embarrassing typos can be a thing of the past. Second, have you ever wished you'd never sent that message at all? Well, good news, now you have Undo Send, so you can immediately recall a recent misfire.
That one got a lot of laughs, Mark, here at Apple Park. But seriously, you made the point that Apple got to an edit button before Twitter did.
You know, with the edit button, I think Twitter has been overthinking it for years. It's not a complex thing. Maybe in the engineering side it's complex, but I think Twitter's issues were more fundamental. And I think Apple basically just ignored the noise around it and just did something simple, right? You send a message, you call Gabe Babe, or you call the wrong person Lamb Chop, to use their examples, right? You're able to just tweak that, and you get a little bubble there that says it was edited, and you move on. No biggie, right? But these features have been long requested. Actually, I think there's one feature that people have been clamoring for more than an unsend or an edit button, and that's the ability to mark a message as unread. You know how you can, in your email, if you want to deal with the message later, if you're already read, you just tag it as unread? Well, now you can finally do that in your messages list, so I'm looking forward to that. It's going to help me reply to people more quickly.
Absolutely. I'm excited about that one, too. Okay, Bloomberg's Mark Gurman. We'll head to Bloomberg.com to check out more of Mark's reporting. Thank you. I want to talk more about these big announcements. There was so much more. Carolina Milanese now of Creative Strategies joining me here on the set here at Apple Park. Let's talk a little bit about the Apple Pay later feature, because this could be pretty disruptive in the world of fintech and this movement from the physical wallet to an Apple wallet. What did you make of the significance of this announcement?
I think the core of it is that it's going to be so much easier for people that use Apple Pay to just use that as a default versus using the plethora of other options that you have in the market. It's about integration. It's about taking away every little bit of friction that you have in the experience. And to be honest with you, something that I was expecting Apple to do sooner or later is, we've seen it with Apple Card and Apple Pay developing more and more in becoming useful for small businesses and more way to use it for consumers.
And it's something that, Mark Gurman had actually reported was coming. And today, of course, was the big unveil. But isn't it kind of a big deal if anywhere they take Apple Pay, you can pay for it later?
It is.
You don't have to put all the money down right away.
Absolutely. And even if it's just a 6 weeks window, so it's not really a long period of time, it's roughly what you do with the credit card payment. Mm-hmm. And so for people that maybe have more problems getting credit checked for credit card, this could be a better way to do it.
Now, one thing we didn't see today was really any clues about augmented and virtual reality. And of course, Bloomberg, Mark, has reported this big AR/VR headset is coming. There was a thought we might get some clues as to what Apple's vision here is really going to be. And I was kind of stretching for it in some of those videos. I was like, is that a sign? But we didn't really see that. I mean, what do you make of the fact that they're just not ready to show us?
I think there are a couple of things. One is that nobody's really rushing to get hands and experiences on AR from a consumer perspective. So the market isn't really screaming for one. And the other one is that for Apple, there's a lot of opportunity in the market today on the Mac and the iPad as it is. And so I think that it's taking advantage of what the really the low-hanging fruit of now are versus trying to maybe get out there too early.
So, Mark Gurman just said that he doesn't think the chip is necessarily going to be that transformational when it comes to the hardware. What do you think?
I think what the silicon does, it's showing that Apple is way more in control of their own destiny than they were before. And so even the fact that we've seen the MacBook Pro 13-inch coming out now so quickly with the M2 after we've seen a release of the M1 just a few months ago, shows that the pace of innovation, both from a hardware perspective and software, can be more rapid than it was before.
And isn't it kind of a shot across the bow at Intel and AMD?
is putting more pressure in the market. And I think that's good at the end of the day for consumers.
So here's the big question. We are going into very tough economic times. You just, you know, Elon Musk saying he has a super bad feeling about the economy, you know, laying off 10% of staff. Jamie Dimon saying we're in for an economic hurricane. Are people going to be spending on new devices right now? And we're expecting a slew of new Apple devices in the fall when they can't afford gas and groceries.
So from an iPhone perspective, you've always seen across all the recessions that we've had, the mobile piece always staying strong because it's so critical to what consumers do throughout their day. And I think that is more so today than it was maybe in the recession of 2008. So the phone part, I think, is pretty consistent. For other devices, and maybe that's where the reality headset, you know, the AR headset, would it be more of a stretch because we still don't know what we want to do with those kind of devices or the return of investment in. But at the end of the day, our life is more digital today than it's ever been. And if there's something that we've seen during COVID is the need for more computing power.
All right. Carolina Milanesi, Creative Strategies. Good to see you here in person.
Same here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. All right, coming up, Elon Musk threatening the deal could be off with Twitter. He says the social networking service isn't serving up enough information on spam and fake accounts. We'll have the very latest next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Elon Musk has introduced another twist into the Twitter takeover saga. Musk says he believes Twitter is breaching its merger agreement by not meeting his demands for information about spam and fake accounts. Bloomberg's Sarah Friar joins us now. Sarah, of course, Twitter responded today saying they are providing that information. What's the real story here?
I mean, I think the real story is you take a step back and it looks like Elon Musk is having the worst case of buyer's remorse on this Twitter deal. And that's certainly something that you can have, right? You know, these M&A deals are pretty ironclad in how they work out. And Elon Musk can't simply, you know, walk away or renegotiate it now that the deal has been inked. And so I think he's trying to figure out a path here. I can't speak for him, right? Nobody knows what exactly is going on in Elon Musk's head. But he certainly seems to be creating a paper trail of some sort about the concern he has over the bot numbers as a way to try to maybe even bring Twitter back to the negotiating table. Maybe he wants a lower price. Maybe he wants to get out of it entirely. But, you know, Twitter is holding firm and saying, we think this deal is the best thing for our shareholders, and we are going to see it through. So
where look, what does would this the actual Maybe- cost? What would the cost of walking away from the deal be for Elon Musk? Isn't it just a $1 billion breakup fee, and then he can sort of, you know, make, you know, bad feelings about the deal go away with an emoji-filled tweet?
I don't think it's as simple as that. No, I mean, I think that he needs, in order to do the breakup fee, he has to prove that there is something materially wrong here. And I think that it's going to be hard to say that this bot issue is it, because Elon Musk has been aware of this issue. He even spoke about it initially as a way he would add value to Twitter is by getting rid of the bots. Twitter has been consistent in reporting its percentage of bots for years. And so it's going to take a lot for him to be able to claim that this is the thing that, I mean, certainly he can claim it, but to prove that this is the thing that that is not, you know, making this deal everything that he thought it was in the beginning.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure there are more twists and turns to come. Sarah, thank you. I want to stick with this story and bring in Dan Ives of Wedbush Securities, who, of course, covers Twitter and also Apple, which we're going to talk about in a moment. But first, on this Twitter thing, Dan, do you think this is just a very public case of buyer's remorse here for Elon Musk?
Okay, Dan, we've talked about it. I think he got cold feet. You know, the bot issue clearly is almost create a story of its own, and this is him trying to walk away from the deal or renegotiate a much lower price. And I think for Twitter's board, backs against the wall, because ultimately they could fight this in court, which will be very long and drawn out. At the same time, there'll be a standalone company, but obviously a bot issue that would really be a black cloud over the stock. And I think that's really right now the quagmire for the board. And I think for Musk, it's really the sort of a poker move of what the next step is.
How big do you think the bot issue really is for Twitter? I mean, we had a former Twitter executive on the show here who said it's really not that big a problem at all.
Well, I think that's the debate, right? Is it 5%? Is it more than 20? Well, whatever the number is. And I think, look, the reality is that Musk, just given the situation, I think definitely changed his tune, right? I mean, he's looking, you know, for, I wouldn't be calling this being the scapegoat, but I think obviously it's cascaded into something. Either he doesn't want to do the deal, or just given the market dynamics, what we've seen, especially with Tesla's stock. And now, you know, legally, this really starts to become a spider web. How does he get out of it? This is clearly the first step shot across the bow. Twitter's board is not going to back down. Then is this a renegotiations behind closed doors, you know, or do they somehow come out with some sort of due diligence that would really deem this, in terms of the bot issue, you know, one way or another, who's correct?
Now, what do you make of Apple getting to an edit button before Twitter?
Look, I think Musk was maybe taking notice. No, but look, realistically, I think as you pointed out, I think it just also shows Apple's listened to developers. And I think from a developer perspective, what we saw with iOS 16, they're listening to what the developers listen to, what consumers want. And I think from a software perspective, it shows that's the hearts and lungs of the Apple story. And it's a big part, along with obviously the golden install base and what we see on iPhones, as well as the overall ecosystem. That's why Apple is where it is. The other thing I would just point out, they're introducing products at a point the supply chain can just navigate massive headwinds, just shows that distribution as well as owning their own chips.
Absolutely. We weren't quite sure we'd see this M2 chip and new MacBook Air, MacBook Pro because of some of those supply chain issues, but indeed we did. I actually got to check out the new products myself. I want to talk about another development here, and that is with family sharing. And as always with these Apple updates at WWDC, it's Apple sort of nudging us and trying to move us towards the technology they believe is going to be the future. Take a listen to this on stage about this new ability to share, for example, your iPhoto library with someone else.
With family sharing, you can share your favorite purchases and subscriptions with up to 5 of your family members, including Apple Music, iCloud Plus, Apple One, and much more. Everyone gets personalized access to their favorite content without having to buy their own subscriptions or share an account.
It's interesting, Dan. We're not just seeing Apple trying to make all of our own devices more connected to each other, but our devices more connected to the devices of other people, for example, in our family. What's the significance of that?
I think it just speaks to an unparalleled ecosystem, and they're just trying to get further and further into that from both the services as well as device perspective. And I think that's what's really happening here is they're doubling down on privacy. And I think you saw that across the board in terms of the presentations, but just more interconnected, more services, more ultimately family sharing from pictures to services to others. And I think that's really the goal here because Apple's right now putting an iron fence around their install base. And I think that's what this really speaks to as they continue to introduce new products. And the one thing I just point out, 225 million of a billion iPhones have not upgraded their phones in the last 3.5 years. So I think it just shows the drum roll to iPhone 14.
Now, Apple shares did take a leg down last week on the back of that Morgan Stanley report about a potential slowing of App Store sales growth. How concerned are you about that? And just how many consumers are really going to upgrade their devices right now in a difficult macroeconomic environment?
Yeah, look, I mean, as you saw with that report, as well as Snap News or any sort of Microsoft FX, the knee-jerk reaction to any negative news is going to be exacerbated in this market. When it comes to Apple, if I read 1 month of the App Store, I mean, I think that sometimes that's not as good of a barometer when I look at the broader services, which is on pace to be $100 billion, you know, as we go into next year. And I think it's a forest for the trees. They could have some softness here and there, but overall, I think that's worth $1.3 to $1.5 trillion. And to your point, in terms of just a broader macro and what we're seeing here, around the edges, they'll clearly see it softening. But what's baked into the stock? And I think most investors believe numbers, you know, are coming down for next year. So I think what starts to happen is stock beats in more and more bad news. But I still believe it's an underestimated upgrade cycle.
All right. Dan Ives, Wedbush Securities. Always good to have you, Dan. Thank you. Another story we continue to watch, according to the Wall Street Journal, Chinese regulators are preparing to wrap up their investigation of Didi and restore its main apps to mobile stores. The report also saying the ride-hailing giant will face a relatively large fine. Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Emily Chang in Cupertino, California, live from Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, and the keyword being developer. Hundreds of them here this week to learn more about Apple's key updates, and of course, millions taking part in this event around the world. We saw a redesigned MacBook Air, MacBook Pro with the M2 chip, along with upgrades to the iPad and Apple Watch, as well as Safari, and a shift away from passwords. I'm joined now by Jess Wolf. She is the CEO and chairwoman of Rebel Girls, a multi-platform empowerment brand with the mission of inspiring the next generation of girls. And you guys are actually finalists for the Apple Design Award. What exactly does that mean?
We are. We're thrilled.
Congratulations. You know, what do you think Apple sees in the design that
so,
you guys have come up
so
with?
So our app, the Rebel Girls app, is a finalist for the Apple Design Award in social impact. There are 6 categories of awards, and we are one of the finalists for them. And it's really around the design, the intentionality behind the app and what we're doing. We are an empowerment brand for girls. We're a storytelling company. We tell the stories of 650 women so far across history, geography, field of excellence, all about inspiring the next generation of girls. And so when Apple is talking to, you know, about apps and what apps make impact, the impact that we're having on girls' lives and our commitment to diversity and representation and authentic storytelling is really front and center.
How can technology help you tell that? I mean, you know, tell that story. I mean, gosh, we've been trying to inspire girls for generations, and you know, we still face a lot of challenges. What is it about technology that can help?
Well, storytelling is what matters. Mm-hmm. So girls starting at the age of 6 start losing confidence, and they start thinking they're less smart and less capable than boys. So how do we tell girls more stories that increase their confidence? So we started in books. We sold 8 million books, but then we went to audio and we went to digital. And so technology can increase access to stories and all kinds of stories, and we can inspire more girls that way.
Now, when it comes to your company and obviously the developers at your company, what is it about a WWDC that's so significant? I mean, I'm sure, you know, are you looking here to see what Apple's view of the future is and trying to figure out how you can capitalize on that?
Well, Apple has an amazingly huge ecosystem of audience and developers, and we've had a wonderful relationship both on the podcast side of things and the app side of things with Apple. So we're here today for the awards ceremony and to see what the future is and how we can be, you know, at the front of the future for storytelling for girls.
So we were hoping to hear some AR VR updates, which we didn't get. There, we thought there might be some clues. You know, we believe there's a headset coming and that could be the next big thing. Is that something that you were hoping for? I mean, I imagine the ability to tell some of those stories and augmented in virtual reality could potentially be very powerful.
Absolutely. So right now we're building an immersive online, offline ecosystem for girls. So we're integrating our books and our audio stories with our app. So you can scan a QR code on a book and it takes you to the expanded audio story on the app. At some point in the future, you can imagine also living and seeing these stories in AR and VR.
What's your take on the controversy around the App Store, the commissions that it takes? Do you believe that it's fair?
Well, as a small business, less is more for us.
But really, I mean, there is a huge controversy around that, and I wonder if does that at all, you know, make you want to develop for other platforms, or no, the Apple platform is so valuable and it's worth the rent essentially that you pay to use it?
The Apple platform is incredibly valuable, and they bring an audience and they support their developers, and that is worth paying a premium for.
Bigger picture, back to your mission, there's been this concern about women and girls potentially backsliding in the pandemic. What's your view on that? Have we lost progress over the last couple of years?
Absolutely.
Or no? Okay, how so?
Absolutely. You see it across the board. You see it what's happening in schools with kids being behind. You see women dropping out of the workforce. Last year, only 2% of venture funding went to women, which was even lower than the year before. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely time for us to step up and do more for girls, for women to advance society.
What's the I'm a mom. What's the secret? When my daughter turns 6, what should I do differently?
Well, you should read her Rebel Girl stories,
right,
for one. Have her listen
to them. I have a few. I have the
books. I love to hear that.
Yeah.
I love that. Help her develop her confidence. Find the thing that makes her really tick and lean into that, right? The thing that makes her smile, whether it's sports or music or math or bugs or whatever. Bring that out in her. Encourage that. Encourage her to build her confidence in that. And from there, she can go on and become an amazing human.
All right. Jess Wolf, CEO of Rebel Girls, thank you so much for blazing that trail and helping to tell those stories.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you for joining us. All right, big updates to the Apple Wallet and the ability to buy anything anywhere they accept Apple Pay in 4 supposedly very easy installments. How much could this shake up the fintech world? That is next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It is time now for our crypto report in Bloomberg. Shanali Bosick with me now. Shanali, we're seeing a bit of a rebound in Bitcoin. What's driving that?
Yeah, something that's interesting is it's not just a little rebound. It's more than a 5% rebound that you saw over the 24-hour period. Bitcoin has been rising since a drop-off late last week. Back now over that 3,100 level. You have it about 31,600 nearly. But listen, something interesting about this too is that it's also driving back up prices on Bitcoin-related stocks. Bitcoin trades 24/7. However, the stock market being open helps some stocks regain some of the losses that they had seen last week. Think the likes of Coinbase, which had risen more today, Riot Blockchain, MicroStrategy. Something I want to point out, Emily, though, is that even though some of those stocks saw a bit of a boost today with that 5% rise in Bitcoin, those stocks had an even steeper drop-off on Friday. While Bitcoin dropped about 2% on Friday, you saw an even steeper drop in those stocks. So question here about how exposed a lot of companies are, as some exchange volumes show much lighter volumes this year than they did the year prior.
Shanali, is there still pessimism after this most recent rally?
Yeah, something interesting about that. I look at what, for example, Lee Drogan over at Starkiller Capital was saying online today, that he wouldn't be surprised that the crypto conference curse continues with consensus and that the market gets slaughtered late next week for another leg down. Just earlier today, I was with another fund manager that said that they are calculating how long a crypto winter could really last. Can it last not just another couple months, but could it last a couple of years? That will be the discussion moving forward and what happens should we see such a sustained downturn.
All right, Shanali, thanks so much. I want to welcome Bloomberg Intelligence's Julie Chariel now to talk about some of the developments when it comes to fintech and Apple. But first of all, Julie, should we be waiting for Apple's crypto play?
I guess the sense of urgency is a little bit off for them now these days with prices being down. Nobody who does hold crypto right now wants to necessarily use it to buy things, given how it's devalued. But crypto payments down the road will definitely be interesting, and I'd expect Apple to be a player there. Still a really small market, about $16 billion last year made in crypto payments to merchants from consumers. So still not a huge market, but an opportunity down the road.
So let's talk about what Apple is doing, and that is Apple Pay Later, announcing this ability to pay later for, you know, anything you buy via Apple Pay in 4 installments. Take a listen to what they had to say about it.
Apple Pay Later lets you split the cost of an Apple Pay purchase into 4 equal payments spread over 6 weeks with zero interest and no fees of any kind. And Apple Pay Later is available everywhere Apple Pay is accepted, in apps and online.
So Julie, this is taking on companies like Affirm and Klarna and Block, which bought Afterpay. How big a market do you think this could be for Apple?
And the buy now, pay later market is quite large. So it's a great opportunity. Lots of consumer demand for this new way to pay. The question is, how many more players, right, are going to get involved? And we think that answer is a lot. Right? We think that buy now, pay later essentially is going to be table stakes when it comes to making payments. Everyone and anyone is going to offer it online and now increasingly in store. So important move for Apple. They should be there. It's what consumers want. Merchants like it because it helps to improve cart conversion. They should be there. But pretty soon we're going to see buy now, pay later options transactions on all of the credit cards and all of the debit cards from our banks and so on that we're used to carrying. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a matter of which one do you want to choose?
Julie,
there'll be no kind of oligopoly here.
How much does it matter the partnerships that Apple is able to make? I think of an Affirm and the partnership they have with Spotify and Amazon. And you look at Amazon and you wonder, can two big tech companies get it together here to play nice in a field like this? Do they need to strike massive partnerships to succeed?
Partnerships with merchants are important, but they're especially important for those pure play emerging buy now, pay later companies like Affirm and Afterpay and Klarna, because they had to put themselves on the map, right? They had to earn the trust of consumers. And by being on a merchant's website, it helps you earn that trust. Apple, I think, already generally has that. They already have millions of merchants on their platform who are accepting Apple Pay. So it's not too high of a hurdle for those merchants to now continue to offer Apple Pay. And if you haven't, then now you will, because you want that access to buy now, pay later. What we see from merchants is they're willing to put almost any payment option on their websites and increasingly at the point of sale to get a consumer to make that payment. Apple's in good shape.
Julie, there's been some skepticism about these buy now, pay later services. You've got regulators taking a look. Are there any negative consequences as an individual to just saying, hey, I'm going to pay in 4 installments, no late fees, no interest, but is there a downside for me?
So for the consumer, it is just a much easier way to pay, because you can spread things out a little bit without spreading them out too much that you potentially lose track or fall into trouble getting overextended. Where the risk comes in is if you take on too many of these small loans, right? And you see that in the next 2 weeks or the next 4 weeks, all of a sudden you have a number of installments coming due, and that gets hard to manage. For the providers of buy now, pay later, right? They have the risk. I may know how much installment credit you have with me, but I may not know how much you have with 2 or 3 other providers of installment credit. And that's where the visibility can come into play and cause some problems. I think it's an area that where Apple is pretty well situated, though, because they have experience with the Apple Card, right, already making credit decisions. And most importantly, they have this huge base of 1 billion users. They see their transactions. They see what they're doing on a regular basis through Apple Pay. They can get comfortable with their financial sort of give and take over the course of the month that way, and can make better decisions in granting installment credit to those users.
All right, Julie Sharia, Bloomberg Intelligence, along with our own Shanali Basik. Thank you both. Welcome back to a special edition of Bloomberg Technology at Apple Park for WWDC in Cupertino, California. I'm joined now by Bob O'Donnell, the founder and chief analyst and president of Technalysis Research. So obviously a lot to talk about today. What struck you as the most significant of everything that we saw Apple unveil?
You know, I think the most interesting thing was actually something that rarely is going to get talked about, and that is the fact that Apple is working with industry organizations for things like the Matter smart home standard, as well as for passwordless. And I know those things are going to impact us later, but they signal in Apple that it's willing to play with other people. And that's not something we've seen a lot of Apple.
So let's talk about passwordless first.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've had to change my iCloud password because I forget, because
of
I just
course.
Don't go back to it that often, for example. You know, what is Apple doing here and why is it so significant?
Well, what they're doing is they're working with this organization called the FIDO Alliance, and it happens to have Microsoft and Google and all the big players in there, and they're all working towards the ability to use biometrics to get into a system, but more importantly, to be able to save that and use it across multiple devices, multiple operating systems, multiple websites. So it becomes like a digital identity that you can use as a mechanism for getting in, and that's a huge step forward.
And let's talk about Matter and the home. I'm glad you mentioned that, because we haven't really gotten to the smart home yet.
Yeah.
You know, the criticism is that it's just taking so long to get these smart home technologies to really go
mainstream. How many people are actually taking advantage of this?
Well, and that's the problem, right? Because, and you could argue, well, is this a reflection of HomeKit really not really doing the, what people thought it would? It is a little bit. But it's, again, the bigger issue is when it comes to smart home, Apple recognized they needed to play with the other guys. They needed to play with Google. They needed to play with Amazon and allow all of these devices to interact. And because they're doing that, that makes things significantly easier for people to pull this all together. Again, it's going to take a little while before we get all the benefits, but the fact that Apple's willing to do that, I think, is reflective of something very different from them.
You also have Apple trying to take on more real estate on the dashboard in your car. Will they succeed?
So CarPlay, again, if we're going to talk long-term strategic impact, that CarPlay announcement is huge. The question will be, you know, how much are the car makers going to be willing to do that? And simple things like, hey, when I turn the car on, whose logo do I see? And who do I interact with? Because this has been the concern that the car makers have had with using Google or Apple, like, hey, we don't want to lose our identity. We want, you know, we're our brand, and we want that to carry through. And so there is a big question of how far that goes, but watch that one. That is going to be interesting.
Now, you and I both got to see the new MacBooks, and I believe there was even an appearance from Tim Cook, who showed up to give a little wave to the crowd. You know, what do you think of the new devices?
Well, they're beautiful machines, right? I mean, the M2 is arguably, you know, an incremental change, but it is a step forward. But that MacBook Air is an absolutely beautiful design, and it's sexy and cool, and it's the kind of thing people are looking for from Apple, and they want to see hardware improvements. And that's the kind of thing that someone can walk away from the show going, okay, cool, I see, I know what I'm going to get next. And again, during the pandemic, computers became so much more important to so many people. So having a new computer, a new design, faster performance, that's exactly what Apple needed to do.
Now, we've seen Apple taking greater control of privacy first, which impacts a whole bunch of technology companies. We also saw some updates to the lock screen, you know, it's all surrounding this idea of focus and letting you be able to, like, use your phone at a glance, but not get lost in it. You know, what's your take on these developments?
I think they're important because, you know, unfortunately, people are getting obsessed with their phones, and they're getting so connected to these phones that they can't pull themselves away from it. And so little steps like that to hide some of the notifications, only show them when you need them, bring in additional widgets to customize the lock screen, all those things have an influence on how people use their device. And the nice thing is, and this is why people like Apple, is I get those benefits even if I don't buy a brand new iPhone, even if I have a 3 or 4 year old one.
And is there a little bit of hypocrisy here? Because, you know, Apple's making it easier to use the phone, but harder to use everything else.
Well, it's a fair point.
Right. I mean, obviously, I want it to be genuine, right?
Right. Well, I mean, look, what they're ultimately, I think, trying to do is how can they get people to get addicted, but not too addicted in a weird way. And they want to get the ability to use their devices across other elements. You know, for example, the ability to use your iPhone as a webcam with a Mac was a really cool way of tying their devices together. They've been trying to do that for years. Figure out ways, what little technology can we do to bring this in so that people want to use more of our own devices? So you're exactly right. I mean, they're trying to get people to do it, but they also recognize, hey, in some ways we've created a problem. What can we do to sort of step that back a little bit in terms of keeping things under control and making more of a glancing-like device, like you said?
So what is this signal to you about what's coming in the fall?
Well, the signal is obviously we're going to see a new iPhone, right? And there'll be new devices there. My guess is now that the M2 is out of the bag, I think we'll see, you know, additional iterations of M2-based devices. We'll see a new iMac. We'll see maybe we'll finally see the Mac Pro that people have been waiting for. That's the last piece of the Mac puzzle that doesn't have an M-series chip. I don't think we're going to see anything on AR for a while because that's the big question.
What's a while? How many years out is this?
It's next year. My guess is
next year?
You and I will sit on this stage together next year and we'll be talking about AR. That's my guess.
Why not yet? If Facebook's doing it now, Meta.
No, it's fine.
Meta's doing it now.
Because remember that Meta is doing VR fully encompassed, in your face, cuts off the world. AR, where I'm looking outside, I can see what's going on around me, but I get, you know, a little bit more information, is much harder to do.
So should we be thinking FaceTime in VR, Maps in VR?
I'm thinking
Apple TV Plus, Fitness Plus in VR?
I'm thinking I'm looking around and I see that person and their name shows up on my screen. I'm like, oh yeah, that's that person's name that I recognize. You know, at a trade show, you see all these people that are out of context, can't remember who they are, and it does recognition because it's in your contacts, and it tells you that. Or you look at a building, or you look, you know, you're traveling somewhere, and you say, what is that? And you look at it, and it tells you. So it's not that it necessarily gives you all of that stuff in 3D, but it overlays, enhances your visual experience. That's
right. Bob O'Donnell of Technalysis. We're going to talk in a year and see if your predictions were true. Thank you so much for joining us. It's good to see you here in person. And thank you all for watching a special edition of Bloomberg Technology live from WWDC. We've got a great show coming up tomorrow as well. Max Levchin, you don't see him on that graphic, but he'll be joining us to talk about this whole Apple Pay Later situation and more. This is Bloomberg.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.